This Is Your Life, Season 2, Episode 7. This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name is Michelle Cachet. I'm your co-host, and I'm sitting in the studio today with Michael Hyatt. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Michelle.
So, you know, there's only one thing that seems to change faster than the weather. You know what it is, right?
I'm going to guess the publishing industry.
Yes, exactly. Oh, the publishing industry. It's changing so quickly, and but the truth is it's very frustrating to writers like you and I who are trying to make a living in the world of publishing.
Yeah.
It just changes all the time. So today, you're going to give us your insider perspective based on your years and years of experience on what has changed in the world of publishing as of late and what it means to us and how we can come out on the upside of those changes. You ready for that?
I am. I'm very excited about this topic. I love publishing. Obviously, I got in the industry because I love publishing, and I'm still continue to be fascinated by it.
Well, I'm always surprised, and we talked about this earlier offline, but I'm always surprised at how many people want to write a book. They either want to write a book, are in the process of writing a book, or they have already written at some point in time and are frustrated with those results. So what we want to do today is take some of the pain out of the process and hopefully help our listeners get a little bit of a head start on what's going on in the publishing world.
That's fantastic, because there are a lot of people that want to write a book. In fact, I read some research maybe about a year ago that there are 8 million unpublished but complete manuscripts in desk drawers, you know, credenzas, you know, that people have completed. They just don't know what to do next. So, and I still think that publishing a book is one of the very best ways to establish your authority, to grow your audience, to increase your business, whatever. But there are a few things that will credential you like a published book.
So let's talk about your credentials on that note, because you have had about, I think, 35 years in the publishing industry.
I'm sad to say, yes, 35 years.
35 years. We won't mention the listeners that are 35 years old or anything like that.
Yeah,
that
no,
would
don't
be
do that.
Offensive to you.
Yes.
Right. And I don't want to hurt your feelings.
No, let's not do that.
Okay. How many years of those 35 did you work at Thomas Nelson?
18.
18 years at Thomas Nelson, and of those 18 years, 6 of those you were CEO.
That's right. Yep.
And now you have been kind of on your own as an author and a speaker and a leader for how many years now?
Well, since 2011. So at the time we're recording this, about three years.
So that's, I mean, altogether, that's a lot of experience that you've had, which makes you really the perfect person to kind of speak to the changes that you've seen in the publishing industry. And on top of that, you wrote a book back in 2012. I can't believe it's been over 2 years already, called Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World, which did exceedingly well, made several bestseller lists, and is still quoted regularly and used. It's still sitting on a prime place on my bookshelf at home. Some people assume, with all of those years of experience and multiple books under your belt, that it's just kind of a publishing another book is just kind of a slam dunk. But that's not the case, is it?
It's definitely not the case. In fact, I'm still shopping one book right now, trying to find a publishing deal, the right publisher, for the last book I've written. So it's not a slam dunk. It's almost like you definitely learn some things, and different parts of the process you get nailed. But it kind of is a fresh thing every time you publish a book.
So you're saying, and I want to make this really clear for those who listen, that I'm sure you've been shopping this proposal. You've already been turned down by some. Is that correct?
Yes.
Which I know is hard to talk about, but it's just a reality of this world. It's just the way it goes.
And it always does. It doesn't always have to do with you or even the manuscript. It could be where the publisher is. It could be the economy. It could be, you know, a dozen different things. But finding the right publisher is a little bit, you know, like just finding the right employee, the right person to marry, whatever it is. It's got to be the intersection of all the right things that make that work.
I probably shopped different proposals over the course of a couple years before I got the first yes. I mean, it seemed like just tons and tons of rejection and nobody wanted it, all that kind of thing. But I had a friend that kept reminding me, it only takes one yes. All you need
is
one yes. And so you can either look at all the no's and all the challenges or just keep pushing forward for that one yes.
Well, and something changes in you in the process, right?
So true.
I mean, you grow as a person.
As a writer,
the manuscript, the way that you pitch it, all of that improves over time. So it's all part of the process. And I embrace it. It's not always comfortable, but I embrace it as part of the process.
So about that book proposal you're shopping right now, about how long have you been working on that?
Well, this is a little bit sad, but over a year now.
Now, see, I don't think it's sad. To me, that just is realistic.
Yeah. I mean, that's just things move slowly in the publishing world.
It really does.
And so the way that worked is I finished the manuscript over a year ago. And normally I wouldn't write a manuscript before I started shopping it, but I've kind of come to the place in my life where I don't like signing a contract and then I have to produce the manuscript. That's just
okay.
Me.
Yes.
You know, I would say that's the norm in nonfiction is people get the contract on the basis of a couple sample chapters and a great proposal, and then they write the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like doing that. So I wanted to write it ahead of time and have a co-author on this particular book. And so we've gone through a couple revisions ourselves, and we shopped it to a very small group of publishers initially because we wanted their feedback before we shopped it more widely than that. And we got some incredible feedback.
Which is great.
And so we spent a couple months going back through and revising.
Well, and I appreciate you being willing to let me kind of expose these more personal details of what you're working on. I think it's important, though, as we're talking on this topic, that that I know and the rest of your listeners know that you're still very much in the trenches when it comes to
yes.
publishing. It's not like you are a far-off observer. You're working it. You're struggling with it every day just like we are.
Well, and I'm probably like anybody else. When I get a no, it stings. You know, I mean, as much as I can talk about it's good for my growth and my writing, that's like retrospective. In the moment, it stings, and you're like, ugh, bad word. You know, I hate that that's happened, that I've got another no, because I would love for life to be easy. But as it turns out, it's more about our character development and everything else.
In fact, I remember getting one extremely painful no myself, and you were the one that helped talk me off the ledge.
Boy, I remember that. I remember exactly where I had that conversation with you.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I also remember that I had cried profusely before and after that conversation, but you really did help shift my perspective on that one rejection, and it ended up having a good ending to the story.
Well, and I think sometimes you need that. And in that particular case, I think it was partly because an editor took a risk to share with you some things that normally the publishing house doesn't share with the author. And even though it stung, it was really helpful.
Oh, it's so valuable. One of the best things that ever happened to me.
Because the thing that's worse than that is feeling like you're taking a shot in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they didn't like it, but they didn't give me enough information to fix it. So now I'm just kind of changing it up, hoping that I get the right combination.
So true.
But for somebody to give you the direction and say, this is what needs to happen is helpful.
Now, as you've negotiated this kind of changing publishing industry, even within this last year, and I have as well, you've noticed multiple changes, things that are different today than they were even 5 years ago, even 2 years ago, 10 years ago, definitely. And so today, I just want you to walk through some of the chief changes that you have seen as you've worked on this next book proposal, as you've been shopping around, and just bring those to light for us.
Yeah, sure.
So start with the first.
Okay. Well, the first one is just there's been a tremendous amount of industry consolidation. You know, there was a very low threshold to become a publisher in the past. And with the economy doing what it did and with people's, you know, more fickle tastes, you know, it's just there's more consolidation. There's fewer publishers.
Mm-hmm.
There's fewer retailers. And as it turns out, there's actually fewer authors that are able to get traditional publishing deals because publishers are playing it safe.
Yes.
They're typically betting on the sure thing. Either they want authors that already have an established platform or a history of bestsellers. So it's very difficult to break into that world. Retail. I mean, Amazon has changed everything. And by the way, before there was Amazon, there was Walmart. And
mm-hmm.
I remember as I was coming up through the ranks, probably the first 15 years or so of my career, everyone was complaining about Amazon and then the big superstores like Barnes & Noble and Borders, if you remember them. And it just keeps changing. And you know, there'll be something after Amazon. It seems like Amazon's swallowing the world. But all this consolidation, there's kind of a negative and a positive aspect to that. And the negative part of it is that it creates sort of this homogeneous kind of sameness to everything.
True. There's not as many fresh voices or fresh products out there. It does kind of...
It's harder to break through, and everybody wants the next, whatever the most successful thing was. Everybody
yes.
wants a, you know, a clone because it takes the risk out of it, and it's proven itself in the marketplace. So that's kind of the negative part of it. I think the positive part of it is that you've got some people that are doing their jobs exceedingly well.
Mm.
You know, publishing has never been better, in a sense. It's frustrating sometimes to authors, but publishers are better than they've ever been. Retailers are better than they've ever been because it's been the survival of the fittest. The ones that are left are the best of the bunch.
And they're doing it well. And
that's right.
They are trustworthy, I guess, in this whole industry because they've proven themselves over time.
They have. You know, part of what I don't like about this is when I was growing up in the business, the people that were in publishing were people that loved books.
Mm.
You know, they'd either personally experienced the transformation because of a book, or they've been involved in those kinds of transformational experiences because of books. But eventually, because it was successful, investors came in, bought up these publishing companies. And in a lot of places, the suits, so to speak, the suits are in control. You know, the people that got an MBA, but they don't really have any publishing experience are calling many of the shots. The good part of that is it's made for a more efficient business. You know, people have had to get better to survive. And again, it can be frustrating, but it is what it is.
Let's talk about writing for a second when it comes to this whole idea of consolidation. Since publishers are looking for kind of a safe bet, people with already an established platform, established following, people that already have bestsellers, there's some that feel like the quality of writing has gone down a little bit because just because somebody has a big platform doesn't necessarily mean they're great writers. Have you noticed any changes in that as far as the quality of the products that are being put out?
You know, I hear about that all the time. And I can tell you that there was never a time in my career as a publisher that people weren't complaining about that. It's like whatever's contemporary by the people that are kind of the snobs, you know, or part of the guild, they always decry what's popular and what's working now. But that's been always the case.
And so it's just nothing new.
It's nothing new.
It's just kind of the typical buzz that goes on, but it's just
Well, it depends on your filter in life. I mean, you can go out there and you can find great examples of brilliant writing, or you can focus on all the examples of bad writing.
That's true. What you're looking for.
It's always been a mixed bag.
Sometimes it can be an excuse for us to not get out there and try, too.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to tell
you
what.
It's a nice smoke screen for our own
lack
of initiative.
That is huge. It's much easier to be the victim.
Oh,
and talk about the big
yes.
bad publishing industry and what's gone wrong with it and we don't really have a chance anymore, rather than saying, no, I'm going to take responsibility for my own success and pursue it.
Now, specifically speaking, as far as consolidation, you know, I write for the Christian market, and which has been kind of swallowed up in these bigger organizations, bigger publishing houses out of New York, whatever. Do you know, do those changes have any direct impact that you've seen on those that might want to publish in the faith market versus the secular market or vice versa?
I don't really think so. I think that's one of those things that people that are in the faith-based market like to point to and say, you know, this is an evil influence. This is terrible. And I've been hearing that from the beginning. My publishing career started at a company in Texas called Word Publishing, which was owned by ABC Cap Cities. It was independent for a while, and then it was sold. But honestly, they exerted no editorial input. They didn't say, you know, you can't publish that because that teaches this. And I've never seen that. You know, I don't care if it's in a public market context. Thomas Nelson was a publicly held company for years, or privately held. You know, most people that are owners respect that, respect your expertise. So I that's probably true even in New York. I don't think owners really exert a lot of impact on the editorial content. They're very cost conscious. They're very much aware of how you run the business.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we all want to stay in business.
That's right.
I mean, that's just a reality.
And it's in everybody's best interest to be profitable, to be successful. That's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. Now, for the either new author out there or the struggling author out there, this first change that we're talking about right now, industry consolidation, is there anything, how does that impact what we do as authors on a daily basis? Is there anything that we need to do differently or anything that we need to be aware of as we move forward as authors to take that into consideration, or is it business as usual?
Well, I think there's a couple things, Michelle. Number one is you got to take your craft very seriously. You know, there's never been more competition. You've got to be good. You've got to approach this seriously. And the worst thing, I used to hate to see this when I was an editor and then later a publisher, is the author that doesn't really want to learn the craft, that thinks that somehow writing is just something that either you have or you don't. Most of them think they have it. And they just want to lay it on the table and say, you know, if you're smart, and I've had authors tell me this, you'll publish this. Or worse, in the faith-based context, God told me to write this.
He told me, oh gosh, yes, I heard that.
And I say, well, obviously he didn't because he didn't put out this kind of stuff. But that's like another conversation. But
and that was not directed to any of you who are listening, just so you know.
Except for two of you, and you know who you are. No, I think that the main takeaway I would say as an author is don't let this industry consolidation be an excuse. You know, publishing is not going away. It's not dying. It's not falling on hard times. People are reading more than ever. Mm-hmm. There's a bright future out there. Mm-hmm. And because people get discouraged and give up, great, less competition. But if you're determined and if you're committed to your craft and you're willing to get better and you're willing to be teachable and learn, you can succeed as an author.
That's such great advice. I find that many wannabe authors, really what they want is the end result. They don't want the process. And a true writer, a true author embraces the process even more than the end result. That the whole package is part of the thrill, not just the book on the shelf.
And it's like this in every industry.
I mean, it's true.
You watch
Absolutely.
American Idol and you see these singers that their mom or somebody told them they could sing and they don't really put any time into it. They just want to show up and they'd love to, you know, get a record deal or something else, but they haven't put in the time.
Mm-hmm. Have to put in the time. There's really no shortcut. That's the other thing that I've discovered as well is some people think, like you had said, that writers either have it or they don't. And I just don't buy into that philosophy. I really think it's a craft. It's a skill that you develop. I think some people have more of a natural bent toward it. But I don't know anybody that was just born able to write fantastic books.
No, that's right. And there are probably a few that are out there. But I think for most of us, we probably do have some talent, you know, mm-hmm. if you're going to be successful as an author. But it's a lot more blood, sweat, and tears than anything else.
All right. So just to recap, that first change for us to be aware as writers in the publishing industry is that industry consolidation of publishers, retailers, all kind of coming together in that consolidation. And what you had said to us is that one thing to be aware of for us is not to let that be an intimidating factor,
right.
but instead let it drive us to actually hone our craft,
yep.
to really excel and do the very best we can at producing quality content.
Good.
What would be the next change?
Well, the change to digital publishing.
Oh, yes.
You know, I can remember when it happened. I remember back in about 2000, Microsoft came out with a digital reader. You know, it was basically uh-huh. a piece of software that ran on our computer. That was going to change everything. Well, it didn't. And it really didn't change until Amazon came out with the Kindle. I can't remember what year that was. But it's been a game changer for sure.
Oh, definitely.
But not a negative game changer. And I think that a lot of people in the publishing world were worried. Certainly, we were worried as publishers because we didn't have our entire archive of content digitized. So we thought if it all goes digital, we're going to be out, mm-hmm. you know, in the cold. But the truth is we focused down. We converted all those old books to digital format.
Mm-hmm.
We put into place a process so that new books were available digitally as well as in print. And I would say right now it's pretty much stabilized. About 25% of the market is digital, and it doesn't seem to be growing that much. It's more in fiction and less in nonfiction. You know, fiction lends itself more to a digital kind of delivery
system.
That's
interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. That's what most of my digital reading is fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually read in both fiction and nonfiction. I read more nonfiction than fiction, but I read it digitally too.
Uh-huh.
But I remember going to Ethiopia with Gail in 2009. We both love to read. Gail had like one whole suitcase almost that was nothing but books. I had my Kindle. And I had all my books
and
right there.
And you probably gloated about it the entire trip.
I tried to talk her into doing the Kindle. She
did
said,
you carry her suitcase for her? That's what I want to know.
No, I did.
No, that's a real gentleman.
But I think that digital has actually opened up more opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowed books to go where they couldn't go before. Because if you think about a physical book, and listen, I love physical books. I don't think they're going away.
No, I don't think they are either.
But any more than candles went away when we had electric light.
True.
Now, I think eventually
well said.
Books might have that kind of appeal.
Uh-huh.
You know, they might be sort of, you know, for the connoisseurs, for people that want that special something that comes only from a book. People that are growing up in, you know, maybe two generations from now, they're going to grow up with the digital format being the natural format.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be a different experience for them. But regardless, when you have a physical book, you have to have physical distribution. And so you have to have places where you can purchase the books,
mm-hmm.
retail stores. You have to have a warehouse and a delivery system. And there's been an enormous amount of waste devoted to that. You'd print these books in the old world of publishing. You didn't really have any idea whether or not they would sell. And the crazy thing about the publishing industry is that you sell them into a bookstore and they're fully returnable basically forever. So if you sold a book in, and I had this experience many times, that you thought was going to be a bestseller and then the public, for whatever reason, decided they didn't want it, all those books would be shipped back to the publisher and either shipped to a secondary market or shredded and disposed of. And all that had to be accounted for in the cost structure. Enormously inefficient. But digital publishing has none of that. And so...
Which from a responsibility standpoint, you know, as a consumer, I'm like, that makes sense to me. I mean, I still love my paper books. I love having it in my hand. But, you know, as a responsible... Yeah, it's more efficient from a responsibility standpoint.
More environmentally friendly. A lot of advantages.
I also find, I know some think that, you know, digital books don't sell for as much as an actual hard copy of a book in some cases, and that, you know, it loses money and authors don't make as much money and all that kind of stuff. But I have found I consume far more books digitally than I do hard copy. I don't know if I go through them faster or whatever, but I actually end up purchasing even more on my Kindle than I do actually hard copies of books. So I see some... I guess I just don't see the full argument that it's losing money necessarily, because I'm actually buying more than I ever bought before.
Well, I can tell you from the publisher's perspective, definitely not losing money. When I was at Thomas Nelson, we did all the cost comparison as we were doing that switchover. And I mean, we had to figure out what we were going to invest in this new technology that promised to maybe just eat up the old technology. We didn't know. But essentially, it was a wash. You know, we made a little bit more money on the digital. You know, we had to price them lower, yes, but we also had less investment. So it ended up being about as profitable, a little bit more profitable than actually physical publishing. I think it can be less profitable for authors. But again, if you take the argument that you were just making, that you're actually reading more, then maybe the volume makes up for the loss per unit. I also don't think that digital royalty rates have stabilized yet. This is an ongoing
fight. We're still in the middle of it.
And discussion. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it almost looks like collusion. I don't think it is. At least I saw no evidence of it when I was a CEO. But... pretty much the publishing industry is standardized on 25% of the retail price goes to the author on digital, but there's no reason. That's arbitrary. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be 50%. Mm-hmm. Some publishers are experimenting with higher royalty rates, but they definitely have less investment in it.
So what should, in this whole discussion about digital publishing, what does this mean for the author, the person that's out there navigating this? What do they need to do differently or think about when they approach this?
Well, I just think it means more opportunity. Again, I think that it means that the future is bright. Because to think that I can get to a end consumer through a digital product and there doesn't have to be a intermediary like a retail store there to actually make the sale. And by the way, I'm all for booksellers and all for retail. They serve a huge, important function. But there are parts of the country and parts of the world that don't have the benefit of a retailer. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to get to those consumers directly is awesome. And there's all kinds of things we can measure when it's digital. You know, we can know, in fact, I'm on the board of a company that, a company called Bookshout, and, you know, we're able to tell how far people read into a book or what parts are their most favorite parts of the book. Amazon can tell that as well. And it all, I just think it's bright with promise.
Yeah, I can see that too. I love that fact that this isn't something that should discourage us, which sometimes I think we can get so caught up in these kind of negative conversations about these doom and gloom. The sky is falling on publishing. It's really not true. I mean,
definitely not true.
I find that as a reader, a consumer, I can pull the trigger on a digital book, make the purchase with, I mean, so much quicker than driving to a store and looking on a shelf and deciding, do I want to spend $12.95 on this or $14.95 on this? Whereas if I'm home on my Kindle, I'll buy it just like that without
Me
much
too.
Thought.
I'm so impulsive about it.
It's crazy.
Know? I know. And I buy a lot more books than I read because of that.
Uh-huh.
But there's just no friction anymore.
Which in that sense is such a smart business move as well. I mean, as an author, I love knowing that that sell is an easier sell for my readers.
Well, and I think that the other thing that goes with this, and we didn't mark this out as a separate change, but it goes hand and glove with this, and that's just online retailing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Amazon is selling a huge amount of the books. By their own numbers, you know, they're selling more in their store, more digital books than they are physical books.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they've made books accessible to everyone.
Yes, and removed all those obstacles, which you mentioned. Yeah. It's fabulous. Okay, so we have industry consolidation, digital publishing. You mentioned online retailing. What would be the next change?
The next change is the importance of the author platform.
Oh, true. I know. I can hear people groaning. Can't you just hear them groaning? They're like, I don't want to hear about this anymore.
Well, because in the old world, what authors, they never really did this, but here's what they thought they did. They thought, you know, they go away and they write this masterpiece and they bring it back to the publisher. And then it's the publisher's job to actually market it. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, either run the ads or they create the publicity opportunities and the author just has to show up. And somebody else essentially is building the platform. And so today that's totally reversed. Because of the economics of publishing, there's less investment in that. And it's because authors have the opportunity to build a platform. Publishers have wisely said, well, let's find those authors that do have the platforms. Mm-hmm. Now, in the old days of old platforms, that would mean they would publish celebrities, you know, who had a natural audience, who had a platform, may not have been their platform, or people that were radio or talk show, you know, hosts or something where they had an audience, even speakers. Mm-hmm. But today, this is almost, you can't get published without a platform. Because publishers are trying to minimize their risk. And the good news for authors is that when you control the platform, you control your future. And so in the past, and we were actually talking about this before we started today, we have a very good friend whose publishing career is tended to, it's kind of on the backside. It's kind of going down. And he's frustrated because he spent no time building a platform. And the only way he can get to his audience, first of all, I didn't know who his audience is. He can't get to him because he has no mailing list, essentially. And so he has to go through the publisher to get that. And then it's just like a shotgun, you know, if we're, you try to get the word out and hope that those authors who have bought you previously will find you again.
Just,
but when you have a platform.
It's a huge gamble.
It's a huge gamble. Mm-hmm. When you have your own platform, you can get directly to them. You know who your audience is. You can get directly to them. The reason that I was able to drive platform to the bestseller list is because I had a mailing list. I had a platform already, and that enabled me to get to the people who love my stuff.
You know, I hear often writers say, and there have even been times in my past too, where I just want to write. I don't want to have to think about all that stuff. I just want to do what I love. Why do I have to worry about platform? And platform sounds so self-serving and so self-indulgent. And I've come to believe that when it comes to publishing, it's honestly just stewardship of a business. I mean, it's just it's just typical business practice. My husband owns his own business, and he doesn't have a business if he doesn't have customers. And his job is to go out there and to find people who want the services that he has to offer. And the same thing is true for what we do. It's just hard for us sometimes to separate kind of the creative side from the business side and realize that you really have to have both as an author in order to make it.
You have to do both. And if you're unwilling to do both, can you succeed? Yeah, it does happen. But it doesn't stack the cards in your favor. You've got a much better chance of getting a publishing deal. And by the way, even if you self-publish, and we'll talk about that next, you still have to have a platform. Mm-hmm. There is no scenario in which you don't have to have a platform.
I would say, just because you can produce a book doesn't mean anybody will buy it.
and lots of people listening to this podcast will tell you that they've, you know, paid to have the books printed through self-publishing, or they've done something, and now they've got a garage full of books and no audience, no way to move it.
They've sold as many as they could to their mom and dad, and they still have books left
over. That's right, they're done.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to that next change. This is the final change, and it is self-publishing.
Self-publishing. This has changed everything. About two-thirds of the books that are published in this country right now are self-published.
Wow, two-thirds.
Two-thirds. And so that's like over a million new titles a year are being self-published.
And that doesn't necessarily mean a lot of people are reading them and buying them. They're just being published.
No, that's right. Okay. They're being published. Well, so much so that it's an entire industry, a subset within the publishing industry, of companies who are serving this audience, you know, helping them either complete the entire process end-to-end or some aspect of the process, so that the authors, in fact, are becoming the customers.
Mm-hmm.
And self-publishing is awesome. Because it allows you, and I've, by the way, I've done both, but it gives you the opportunity, if you can't get a traditional publishing deal, that you can get your book out there. Now, as we pointed out previously, if you don't have a platform, that's still not going to do a lot of good, because it's not going to mean that people are going to, you know, beat your door down to get the book, because if they don't know who you are or have a relationship with you, that's not going to happen. But at least it's possible to get into print or to get into a digital format more easily.
And it really depends on what your goal is. Not everybody has this dream of writing a book that millions of people are going to read. Some people, and I have some friends that have done this, they want to write something that is purely for their family, for their grandchildren or for their children or for their parents, whatever it may be, or just for a select close group of friends. And from that standpoint, you can self-publish and produce produce your 50 copies or whatever, and that's enough. And there's no shame in that. That's a wonderful, beautiful thing to do for your family. So if that's what you want to do, then maybe platform isn't important, but self-publishing would serve your purposes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a perfectly legitimate use of self-publishing. And there are, of course, self-published authors that have sold millions of copies. So you can be enormously successful as a self-published author. And that really, I think a takeaway for authors is there's no right answer on this. You know, traditional publishing, self-publishing, or something in between, it really depends on your strategic intent. What are you trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. What is your platform and your availability and how accessible are publishers to you? Do you know anybody? Can you get an agent? That's going to determine what you do with it. But all the real big takeaway is that there's more options than ever before.
Which is great news. I mean, you're not trapped. There's so many different possibilities. Another caution I wanted to throw out there, too, is that a lot of wannabe or aspiring authors think that there's one, like there's going to be the silver bullet, one thing that's going to finally make it for them. And there's really no formula that works for everybody and makes it happen for them every single time. So some of it's some trial and error and trying something out, seeing if it works, and then learning from your mistakes and trying something new. And there's just no magic formula.
No. And you just got to be persistent.
Yeah. As you've experienced.
As I've experienced and continue to experience. Every time I think I get the formula figured out, you know, I encounter a new challenge and, you know, in retrospect, that's good.
Yes, it is. And reminds us again as authors that really our joy should be in the process as much, if not more so, than the end result.
Well, and that's the thing I would love, you know, as we're wrapping this up to think about, and that is just the joy of being published and to be able to connect with people that you will probably never meet and to have them read your words and have some experience that changes their life forever.
Well, I have really enjoyed this conversation, been personally very beneficial to me as I love this whole publishing world most of the time. Sometimes I hate it, but most of the time I love it. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today, Michael. If you as well enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all the show notes as well as a full transcript of the entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. If you'd prefer to watch rather than listen, you can also watch the entire video at Michael's website. Again, that's michaelhyatt.com. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think, honestly, everybody who's listening to this podcast, if you're not a published author, you should seriously think about it. There are a few things that will grow your business, grow your authority, enhance your prestige, make you get your message out there better than publishing. So it's something everybody should think about doing.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you again for being with us today. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I are going to talk about the gift of today and the four ways you can transform today, regardless of your circumstances.
You know, and I've had these situations where maybe everything wasn't going well, or I had a setback or whatever, and then maybe just in a moment of lucidity, I think, wait a second, I'm living in this country with this family, with an amazing job, whatever it is. I mean, and again, it's not that my family's any different than somebody else's. It's just that to notice that and to be grateful for it can shift everything.
That's next time on This Is Your Life.